Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Yevamos Daf Kuf Chaf. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you're already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins in the middle of Daf Kuf Chof at the Mishnah. Before we learn the Mishnah, we glance at the side where we have a Nosei Mivnei. Nosei is a topic heading, Mivnei a structural note, featuring the double underline, one of our series markings that we've used in the Mishnah. We highlight the expression Ein Me'idim. We're dealing with testimony concerning a body found and an attempt to identify this as the husband of so-and-so, the woman in question. So we've noted that the double underline represents a series of prote dinim, detailed laws, hakshurim li'edus alames, that have relevance concerning testimony over the dead one, the corpse, the Mishnah. Ein me'idim elo al partzuf ponim im hachoitem. Testimony won't be accepted, isn't considered reliable, unless the testimony is of the witness noticing, recognizing the forehead together with the eyes and the nose. In other words, you need to see that minimum amount or be able to identify the body by seeing that minimum amount. Afal pi sheyesh simonim begufo ubekelov. Even though there might be signs, body signs, rest of the body, or clothing that the mace, the corpse, is found in. In other words, body signs and clothing signs are not sufficient in order to know for certainty that this is so-and-so. Ein me'idim elo ad shetetze nafsho. Testimony establishing that the fellow is dead cannot be relied upon unless they testify that they saw him actually dead, that his soul departed from the body. V'afilu ra'uhu meguyod v'tsoluv v'achayo oichel esbo. When we say ad shetetze nafsho, this is to the exclusion of them having seen him meguyod. Meguyod is a situation where he is his body has been severely injured, cut into, full of bruises and piercings of a sword. That's not enough. Soluv is crucified. That too is not enough. Or a person is seen being eaten by animals. That too is not enough. In other words, witnesses who say they saw so and so, they saw Charlie being chopped into pieces. In other words, pierced by a sword, or they saw Charlie posted up on a post, crucified, or Charlie was being eaten by wolves. That and that's all you saw. You didn't see him actually dead. You cannot testify that he's dead, even though through conjecture you might assume he probably would die. Ein me'idin elo ad shloisha yomim. You would have to have seen the individual within 3 days of his actual death, and then be able to testify about him. But if you saw him more than 3 days since his death, the decomposition process is responsible for changes, and you might notice someone that looks like A when, if you would have seen him as soon as he died, it would appear to be someone else. Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava Oimer, Lo kol ha'odom v'loi kol ha'mokoim v'lo kol ha'shois shovin. You cannot establish blanket rules concerning time and place. There are some people that decompose more rapidly than others. There are some places that are hotter and decomposition will set in faster. As far as what is Rabbi Yehuda ben Bava trying to accomplish here, is he arguing with the Tanakhama, or is he coming to be more strict, more restrictive, or more flexible? That the Gemara will deal with. As we continue in the Gemara, the topic at hand, the Nosei, Edus al Parzuf Haponim, as we've written on the side. Edus is testimony concerning the face. And when we say the face, we're speaking about the forehead, the eyes, and the nose. Tanu Rabbanan, Padachas v'lo Parzuf Haponim, if the witness saw the forehead, but not the other facial features, Parzuf Haponim v'lo Padachas, or he saw the facial features and not the forehead, ein me'iden, then testimony cannot be accepted ad shushneim im hachotem, until you have the parts of ponim and the padachas together with the chotem. So we've explained till now that's the forehead, the eyes, and the nose as well. Omar abai vitemor avtana, my craw, what is the pasuk that indicates that you're able to recognize a person this way? The pasuk says, "Hakoras pneim onsa bom," that the recognition of their face is what is responsible for your knowing them. The Rashi adds that from here we see that edus is relevant only if it includes the face, not the rest of the body. Recognition is not through being able to identify body signs. Abo bar martadu, abo bar minyumi, have a maski bay de bay resh galus azuzi. This gentleman, Abo, his name is Abo bar Marta, who has another name, Abo bar minyumi, same person with an alias, if you will. The head of the house of the exilarch were attempting to collect money from Abba, and he didn't have the means of paying. He didn't want to pay, but he wanted to avoid them. Icy Kira, he brought some Kira's wax. Dovak bablaisa, dovak babuse. He then had the wax, let's assume melted wax, and he mixed it together with some rags, worn out clothing, and then he stuck that on his forehead. So he had a type of disguise where his forehead was covered. Cholof Kamayo, the house of the exilarch, members of the household passed by him. Velo Bashkirua, and they didn't recognize him. So the fact that all that he had covered up was this padachas, his forehead, that was enough to send them away to gain anonymity. Afal pi shiyesh simonim begufa ubekelov. The topic heading we have on the side, the nosei, is yishuv stira, an attempt to resolve a seeming contradiction between mishnosenu le moker beinyan get shenevad mishaliach. Our Mishnah, we've learned already, there's another source that deals with a divorce document, a get that was being conveyed by an agent, a shaliach, an emissary. Haim soimchem al simonim. Can we rely on signs to establish facts? Signs are recognizable elements that helped me to identify an item. So our Mishnah said, even though there were simonim, there were signs in body signs or identification marks in the clothing, you could not rely on them to establish the identity of the deceased. Lameimra, this would seem to suggest the simonim lavdei raisa, that signs, identification marks, cannot be relied upon for matters that are of a Torah level nature. Viramini, and regarding that point, we raise a contradiction. Viramini, we have a Tanaic source that refers to a person conveying a get, serving as an agent for delivering a get, a divorce document from a husband, from a man to a woman. And while conveying it, while carrying it, it got lost. Motzoi koshur bekis uva arniki uva tabas. The shaliach finds the get tied to a pouch, an arniki, another type of vessel that contains things, or to a ring. And the agent recognizes these elements. He recognizes either the pouch or the wallet or the ring, Oshininsa Bain Kalov, or he finds the get amongst his vessels. Afilu Lizman Muruba, even if it's after a while, long time past, kosher, the shliach can pick up that get and continue taking it to the woman that he was instructed to deliver it. The Rashi, Bain Kalov, Bain Klebeso, he finds the divorce document amongst house vessels, Umakir Es Hakis Vesetabas Shehen Shelo, and the Shaliach recognizes the pouch or the ring as his own, Kosher, Velo Chayshinon. We say the get is kosher to be delivered to the woman, and we're not suspicious. Dilmo hai kis b'hai tabas d'inish achrino have. That the pouch or the ring belongs to someone else. B'hai get acher hu. And the divorce document belongs to someone else. Almo, what do we see from here? Samchinon asimono d'is leba kisu v'arniki. We rely on the identification marks that he has in the pouch or the wallet. Ve'afilu lemishri isur eishes ish doraisa. Even to the extent that upon the delivery of this divorce document to the woman, she will be considered divorced, and we're changing her status on a total level from a married woman to now an unmarried woman. Almo simonim deraisa. See from here that simonim identification marks function on a Torah level. Now, what about our Mishnah? Our Mishnah said even if you have identification marks in the body or clothing that he's wearing, so they're not sufficient to enable us to release the woman and claim she is now a widow. The diamonds that you see are explained on the side under the Mivneh heading. These are Tirutzim Shel Abaye V'Rava, answers given by Abaye and Rava. Yesh Litzayin Shetachas Shmo Sherava Mofiim Kamo Lishonos. We feel necessary to point out that under Rava's name there will appear several versions, several Lishonos, so that when we get to Rava, we will end up noticing we have an Aleph version, and then on the bottom line of the Gemara, you can see there's a squiggle underline, the Ikar de Amri, and we call that the Beis version. So let's now start the answers to resolve this seeming contradiction. Omar Abaye, Lo Kashya Ha, Rabbi Lezer ben Mahavoy, Ha Rabbanan. The two Mishnayos really represent two different Tanaic opinions. Desanya, Ein Me'idin Al Hashuma. One cannot testify in order to identify a body based on a Shuma, a wart. Rabbi Lezer ben Mahavoy, Omer Me'idin. And Rabbi Lezer says, if you recognize the person through the wart that you see, so then you can say, yes, that was so and so, and he was dead. My lav b'ha komifligi. Now we have a new marking. This triangle appears on the side. Ma'akav achrei kol hatshuvos. This is an attempt to keep track of all the different answers that will appear throughout the Gemara. And we indicate there are four, besacha kol, four total. So what is the machlokis here based on? D'mor sovar simonim d'oraisa. U'mor sovar simonim d'rabonon. Rebbe Lozer ben Mahavoy holds that simonim are reliable on a Torah level. And hence, if you associate, you know that so-and-so had this kind of wart, and you see that wart, you can then say, this is so-and-so, and the woman will be a widow, and hence we're undoing her Torah-level married status. The Tanakhama says, no, simonim serve only on a rabbinic level. And hence, if you have a Torah level status that is going to be changed, you can't rely on that. Omar Rava, Dekule Almo Simonim Doraisa. Now, this marking, the trapezoid or volcano shape, is explained on the side as reflecting or highlighting the schools of thought, Simonim Doraisa, with the narrow part facing up, and the inverted will reflect that he holds simonim derabbanan. So here we're now dealing with Rava, and the first lashon of Rava has Rava saying that everyone holds simonim deraisa. The ikar the amri, on the bottom line, you have Rava presenting an opposite approach. So Rava tells you that all the tanoim will hold that simonim are deraisa, that you should be able to rely on simonim even for Torah level matters. Hacha. Here, there is a machlokis that's very specific to the issue of the wart. Ben Gilo is an expression which refers to two people that are born under the same zodiac sign, the same horoscope. In Hebrew, it's referred to as the same mazel. Is it so that two people born under that same sign, the same heavenly sign, would they have similar phenomena applying to them? In this case, the wart. If that would be so you can't rely on the wart as an identification with any degree of certainty that it's so-and-so, because it might the body that you found with that wart might be the body of someone else that happened to be born under the same sign, the same mazel of the person that you know that had that wart. So Mor Sovar, the Tanakamu, said you can't rely on the Shuma. He holds Shuma Mitsuya Bevengilo. It's common to find a similar Shuma on the body of someone that's born under the same mazel. Umor Sovar, Eino Mitsu ben Gilo. And Rebbe Lozer ben Mavoy says, you don't assume that. It's not common that it's found on similar Shuma, similar types of warts are found on someone born under the same mazel. Ve'ika Diamri, another approach. Hocha, now here, this is another approach within Rava, but under the heading that simonim are doraisa. So what's the machlokis regarding the wart? B'hacha b'shumo asui lishtanos l'achar miso komifligi. Do warts change upon the death of the individual? Mor sovar asui lishtanos l'achar miso. The Tanakhama says you can't rely on the wart as positive identifications because warts change after death, so that the wart that you're seeing is a wart that has undergone a change, so that right now it looks to you like it belongs to so-and-so, but if you had seen this wart before the person died, you would have realized that it's not so-and-so. It's not the person that you think. Umor Sofar Rebbe Lozer ben Mavoy, who says you can rely on the wort, he holds Eino Asuyo Lishtanos Lachar Misa. It's not ordinary for it to change after death, and what you see now on the corpse is the same as you would have seen while the fellow was still alive, and hence it is the person that you think it is. The Ikar Diamri Omar Rava. Now here we have the second version of Rava, where the issue of Simonim Daraisa Darabonan undergoes a change. Where here Rava says the Kule Alma Simonim Darabonan. Everyone will hold that Simonim are reliable only on a rabbinic level. So now, if you say that everyone holds that simonim are derabonan, how can, in the source regarding the wort, Rebbe Elazar ben Mavoy say that you can use that as an identification mark to enable a woman to be reclassified now as unmarried? The hacha b'shuma, we continue at the top of Omid Beis, equals simin muvhok, komifligi. Simin muvhok is not a standard run-in-the-mill identification mark, but rather muvhok means it's exceptional, it's outstanding, it's very unique. So that even though simonim in general would be considered reliable only on a rabbinic level, a simin muvhok would be something you can rely on even on a doraisa level. Mor sovar simin muvhok, Rebbe Lozer would be of the opinion that the Shuma constitutes a simin muvhok, and more so the Tanakama would hold lav simin muvhok, and hence he told you you cannot use that as a basis of edus, of testifying that so and so is dead, which of course results in the freeing of his wife from the Ashes Ish status. Ulahach lishna di omar rova simonim doraisa. According to that version, the first version of rova that holds simonim are reliable on a Torah level. Hakotani, but does it not say in our Mishnah afal pishiyesh simonim begufa ubekelov that even though there were identification marks on his body or his clothing, you cannot rely on them? The Gemara answers that the Mishnah that made reference to the body and Kalov, there were signs, identification elements that were a bit too general, too broad. Gufo, when the Mishnah says that even though there are signs on his body, the witness was saying, I saw someone, da'oruch, I saw a tall person. In other words, that and I know that so and so, the deceased, was a tall man, and the fellow says, "Yeah, it must have been Bill that was dead, because I saw a tall fellow that was dead." The goods, or you know, I know that Bill happened to be a short fellow, and the guy I saw was short, so it must have been Bill. So that's there are a lot of people though that are tall or short. So it's not considered a sign that would help identify with any degree of specificity the deceased. Kalov, regarding the clothing, even though you recognize those clothing and you can give specific signs about the clothing, however, d'chayshinon l'sheila, you're saying that you saw, let us say, Bill that was dead, because you know that Bill had this a certain kind of plaid shirt with a certain rips in its seams, and yet that's not enough for us, because maybe Bill, who had loaned his special red plaid shirt with the rips in its seams to Roy, and Roy was the dead man. And you're coming and saying that, oh, I saw Bill dead because I know that Bill has that kind of shirt. But Bill might have loaned the shirt to Roy. The Gemara continues with questions regarding this particular answer. On the side of the Gemara, under the Nosei Mivneh heading, we have a double underline marking. These are shtei she'elois, two questions. I chayshinu l'she'elah, if that is to be considered, namely that people loan items to others, eich machzirim devorim elu hamufrotim ba'gemora. How is it that we return items to people that are mentioned in the Gemara? The Gemara continues, V'i chayshino l'she'ela, if that's something we concern ourselves with, chamor b'simone ukaf heichi mahadrinon. If there's a lost donkey that was found with an ukaf, with a saddle on it, and someone comes along and says, yeah, that's my donkey because the saddle that it was wearing has these and these identification marks. So how can we return it to the fellow giving signs regarding the saddle? Maybe he had loaned the saddle to someone else and it's someone else's donkey. The Gemara says, Lo shayli inshi uchva. People would not borrow someone else's saddle for their donkey. The maskiv le lechamra. It would—it's not a perfect fit. And maskiv means would bruise someone else's donkey. So it's not in the interest of another donkey owner to use a borrowed saddle. What about the following? Motso kosher bekisuv arniki betavas. We saw that case just before with the get that was lost. And the shliach noticed it tied in a pouch or a wallet or a ring belonging to him, belonging to that particular shliach, that agent. So how can we return it to him? Hechi madrin, how can we return it to him? It's true that the agent recognizes the ring as his, but maybe he loaned it to someone else. So the Gemara says, no, these items people would not loan to one another. Tabas chayish l'ziyufi. Tabas is a ring that has a signet on it, and the owner would never loan it to someone else because of the fear that the fellow borrowing would forge it, would copy it, and use it for signing things in someone else's name. Rashi says, "Lizufa shemo yase choisvitzura keneget haboso." If A would loan it to B, so B would recreate that ring that technically that in truth belongs to A. V'yelich v'areu liishto v'yitol heimeno kol asher yishal. B would then go to the wife of A, who recognizes this as A's, as her husband's signet ring, and claim that her husband ordered her to give over to Mr. B whatever he requests. So the owner of the ring, Mr. A, would never loan it to someone else. So that if Mr. A identifies that as his ring, he describes the signs of the ring and as only an owner of a real owner could do, so whatever is wrapped in that ring that would belong to him. He would never have loaned it to someone else. Kis v'arniki, these kind of pouches, menachshi inshi velo moshli. People say that it would be bad luck for them to give it to someone else. So they would never, menachshi has to do with fearing bad luck. So they would never, velo moshli, they wouldn't loan it to others. V'boyaseimo, another explanation. Notice we have a little bays in a diamond. So if you skim up a few lines, you'll see an aleph in a diamond. This is here to explain why in the Mishnah we saw Kalov, even though we're holding Simonim Doraisa, why was Kalov an insufficient form of identification? So before we had answered, of course, we're fearful that even though you can identify with precision the garment worn by the corpse is belonging to so-and-so, there we're afraid that the real owner of it isn't the corpse because he had loaned it to someone else. Here, the Gemara says, the witness who's identifying the clothing is giving a very too general an identification, and hence we can't rely on that. Bechivri, the Sunni Chivri means he's saying was a white shirt, and that I know that the deceased had white shirts, or Sunni, a red shirt. So those are, lots of people though have those, and it's therefore not a sign, a certain sign that it belongs to the person you claim it is, it belongs to. The Mishnah said that you cannot be meid, you can't testify, v'afilu ra'u meguyad v'chule, even if you saw him with serious wounds in his body, cut up and wounded, that doesn't mean he is dead. So that you saw someone that was meguyad, and you're coming and claiming that so-and-so that you saw to be meguyad is at her, and you tell the wife of that person that your husband is dead. The Gemara introduces a topic, and we in this, on the side of the Gemara under Adinu say we've written meguyad chaye o lo chaye. Does a person who is in that state live or not? So from our Mishnah, we got the impression that someone who is meguyad could continue living. Therefore, saying that telling the wife of that individual that your husband is dead would be inaccurate. The meimra de meguyad chayi. Are you suggesting that from our Mishnah then that my meguyad lives? The Ramini, but we have the following source which would indicate to the contrary. Adam eino mitame ad she teitze nafsho. A person will not communicate corpse defilement until there is life breath departure. Afilu meguyad v'afilu goyseis. Even if you see him in a state of meguyad, or even if he's in the throes of death. Now we infer, temuye lo metame, we can tell you that he doesn't communicate defilement, corpse defilement, ha michya lo chaya, but he's not going to live. So from this source, we infer to the contrary of that which the Mishnah suggests, our Mishnah has suggested. Omar Abai lo kashya. There is no contradiction. Ha Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, ha Rabbanan. Our Mishnah that says he's considered alive, in other words, you can't testify about him being dead, is according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. The Rabbanan would indicate, no, that he is going to die. He's as good as dead. The Sanya me'idim al hameguyad, v'ein me'idim al atzoluv. The Tanakhama says you can testify about a meguyad as being dead, but you can't testify thusly about someone who is tzoluv, someone who is crucified. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar omer, af al hameguyad ein me'idim, m'nei shiyachol lichvois ve'lichyos. Even someone who is meguyad, who has these serious puncture wounds, you cannot testify about him being dead, because they can, lichvos is cauterized, and continue living. So that our Mishnah, which says ein me'idin al meguyad, is going to be like Rav Shimon Elazar. Mi matzis le'ukme ki Rav Shimon Elazar, can you really set up our Mishnah that meguyad is considered alive in accordance with him, with Rav Shimon Elazar, v'ha'at katani seifa? The end of the Mishnah, the continuation of the Mishnah, says, Maisa ve'asya, asya is the name of a place, be'echad sheshil shiluhu liyam, an individual had been lowered into the sea. V'lo also be'odim, and when they hauled up the rope that so-and-so was lowered into the sea with, They brought up lo also biodam elo ragloi. All they brought up was his leg. The omru chachamim minu arkuva ulamalo tinose. If that which you hauled up was a leg, the section of leg which included above the knee, so you had a foot with a leg, including the knee. So the woman is considered now a widow. So here, from this we see, from the fact you have a person that was cut up, he's not considered alive. Tinosei means the widow, the woman, the wife can now remarry. Minarkuva ulamata lo tinosei. If the piece of leg that you hauled up was from simply from below the knee, so the woman cannot remarry. So what we're doing is we're associating minarkuva ulamala as the equivalent of meguyad. And from here in the Seifa, you see the man won't live. And yet, Reb Shimon ben Elazar says regarding Meguyad that he does live. The Gemara says, "Shiny Maya." This particular case, where in the Seifa, where we see he won't live, is because it involves waters. Shiny means different. Water is different. The Marzu Maka, it will irritate and increase the severity of a wound, so that the same individual on dry land would in fact be someone who is capable of continuing to live on. Not so when that injury is coupled with his presence in water. The Gemara now asks a question on the opinion that Meguyad does not live. The Omar Rabo Bar Barchano Ladidi Chozili Hahutaya. I saw an Arab, the Shokil Safsira. He drew his sword, the gaide the gamle, and chopped up his camel, for lo afsikse linaruse, and the camel continued making noises, groaning, until it eventually died. But what we see from here is that even after you have a situation of meguyad, the creature is still making noises, so it's considered alive. Omar Abaye. Abaye says no, it's not a sign that he's considered alive, but it's kechisha havya. Kechisha is a word that often is associated with a form of weakness. In this case, there are those that explain this particular phrase as meaning that the cutting that the Arab made into the camel were not very deep. And that was a function of the camel being very lean, so that the cut marks really weren't deep to begin with. There's another possible explanation that I'm saying from, say, distant memory, that the kfisha means quite the contrary, that the camel really is considered dead, and the sounds that were being emitted were only like post-mortem type sounds, that groaning sounds that are associated with the departure of the life breath of the creature. So there were signs that came from kisha, meaning signs of weakness, of total weakness and loss of life. Rava Omar, the case involving the Arab and the animal viewed as continuing to live, is besakin milubenes v'divrei kol. It was a knife that was white hot. It was lubenis. It was very hot. And what happened is that as the slicing of the cuts were made into the camel, it actually cauterized the wounds, sealing them up, and hence, of course, the animal could continue to live. But in general, if it's someone cut with the deep wounds with a regular knife, the individual will not continue living. So as to remove any questions on that mandoma that says that a meguya would not continue living. V'achaya oicheles v'chulei. As we go on in the Gemara, we notice some triangles, and on the side, under the Nosei Mivne heading, you see we feature a triangle. These are Meimros Shel Reb Yehuda Omar Shmuel, comments made by Reb Yehuda in the name of Shmuel, Beinyan Mishe Nechbal B'mokim Shenafsha Yoitza, someone who was injured in a place of the body where it would be a fatal type wound. Nafkamina Lagabi Lahoido Lovli Ishto. This has practical bearing regarding testimony releasing his wife from Aishas Ish status to become a widow and marry someone else. Haim Yochol Litzavois Al Get. If someone is injured in this fashion, an injury to a mortal part of the body, critical part of the body, can he instruct regarding a get to be written for his wife? And chiyuv ir miklat, what about the obligation of the one who inflicted the injury, if done bishogeg, if done unwittingly, to exile himself to a city of refuge, which is the normal procedure for someone who killed someone unwittingly? So the Gemara, Omar Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Loi Shanu, that which we said that we're not made, we won't testify about so and so who as being dead, who was seen being eaten by a wild animal. So we don't testify. Elo mimokum shein nafsho yoitza, where the animal was gnawing at him, tearing at him, at a part of the body that wouldn't result necessarily in life departure. Avol mimokum shenafsha yoitza, if you saw, let us say, an animal gnawing away at someone's neck, so that's a place where if a person experiences an injury, a cut into a deep cut into one's neck, he will inevitably die. So if you see an animal gnawing away at someone's neck, which is an example of mokum shenafsha, it's a place where life breath departs, may eden, you could testify, even though all you saw was the animal gnawing at that individual's neck. If that's what you saw, and then you ran away from the scene, and you come and tell his wife, you know, your husband is dead, he is considered dead. The Omer of Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shochat boi shnayim oi roiv shnayim uborach, me'iden. We're referring to the tubes that run in a person's neck, the trachea and esophagus. Those are the two, the shnayim referred to. So if they were slaughtered, they were shochat, is to cut them open, both of them or the majority of both of them, and whoever did that ran away. That is, and the person, the victim, the nishchat, even though his neck was cut to that extent, and he, the victim, ran away, me'idim, we nevertheless can testify that he is dead. In other words, true, he ran away at that point, but then a few feet later, a few meters later on, he's going to really drop dead. The Gemara asks a question, lasts a couple of lines, ain't he? Is that so? V'homa Rav Yehuda Amar Shmuel, Shochat Bo Yishnayim Oroiv Shnayim, a person who was cut like that. V'romaz V'omar, and he made some type of signs which indicated Kisfuget L'Yishti, write a divorce document for my wife. Hare Elu Yichtevu V'yitnu, those who are present and hear those instructions can write and deliver the get to this man's wife. And it's obvious that a get and instructions to write a get can only be done by someone that is alive. So he's considered alive. The Gemara says, yes, he is considered right now alive, but that doesn't contradict the our ability to be made about his death. Chai hu, he is alive right now, and hence he can issue these instructions regarding the preparation of a get. V'soifoi lomus, and eventually he is going to die. In other words, shortly thereafter he will die. Elo me'ato, if this be the case, that shochat bo shnayim, he's definitely going to die, So the one who did that, assuming he did it b'shogeg, unwittingly, yehi goyle al yodo. Through that, because of that, he should be sent to an ir miklat. He should be exiled to a city of refuge, which is, as we said, is standard procedure in Jewish law for people who commit murders unwittingly. Aloma tanya. Why then do we see taught in the following source? Shochat shnayim or roiv shnayim, hare ze eino goyle. If someone had inflicted this type of wound in someone else, he does not go to exile. In other words, the rules of exile, which entail a murder having been done unwittingly, that isn't the case over here. So it would seem on a superficial level that it's not considered as if he has been killed or is the he's committed a murder. The Gemara says the fact that it says Eino Gola does not contradict this being considered a murder. Ha Itmar Alo Amar of Hoshaya Chayshinon Shema Haruach Bilbalosai. We're suspect that maybe the atmospheric conditions, the wind, irritated the wound, and because of the wind, he actually died. And that's why the one who inflicted it does not go into the exile, doesn't Golos, it's called Golos, to exile to the city of refuge. However, as far as testifying regarding a death and saying to a woman, you know, your husband died, that can still be done. He's definitely going to die. The question is, what was the real cause of the death? Was it the infliction of the wound itself, or was it the fact that there were also atmospheric conditions, wind conditions, that contributed to his death? Either way, he's going to die. But as far as Ir Miklat, that would not be an obligation or be an expectation if the death was attributable to a contributing factor, namely the wind. So as we said, there's no contradiction in principles here. Death, yes. To say he's the one who inflicted is the one who's solely responsible for that might be not the case. E nami, another approach to explain why Eino Gola, even though we're insisting the fellow who had his trachea and esophagus severed, even in a majority fashion, is yes considered as good as dead, and we can be made all of as such. Nevertheless, why Eino Gola? Shemo Ihu. The Gemara continues at the top of Kuf Chof Aleph, Kirev Misaso. We're afraid that the victim himself, by flapping around and making all kinds of motions, actually irritated the effects of the wound, and he hastened his own death. And as we explained before, if the victim did all of these kind of what Rashi calls pirchus actions, jerking motions, so then the one who inflicted is not the sole inflictor of the death. The victim himself contributed to it. My binayu, what is the difference between these two explanations? The explanation of Shema Ruach Bibloso versus Kirev Misoso. What's the difference between these two explanations in the context of the need for going to a city of refuge? So the Gemara explains. One explanation, the shachtei, the base of the shisho pirchus. Imagine that the infliction of the neck wound was done in a base of the shisho, literally a marble house. It means, for our purposes, it's a room that is lined with stone, and there's no wind that blows in there. And on the other hand, after the injury was inflicted, the victim did flutter, jerk around. All these kind of movements that we described earlier. So that according to the Ruach Bilbaloso exemption for the perpetrator, that exemption wouldn't apply over here. However, according to the opinion that Kirev Misoso is the basis of the exemption of going to Golos to exile, that would apply. Inami, another case where you can see a difference between the two opinions, Deshachte Bebora Velo Pirches. A person was sliced, in other words, his neck was sliced outdoors where there is wind, but he didn't make any movements. So according to the Ruach Bilbiloso exemption for Golos, that would apply here. The person who had done it outdoors would not go to Golos. But according to the Kirev Misoso approach, there was no Pirchus. Therefore, we can't say that the victim contributed to his own death, and therefore there would be Golos according to that opinion. We also saw that there's no Eidus, Ein Me'idin. We said Ela Gimel Yomin, unless the Eidus is within 3 days of his death. Reb Yehuda Omer, Lo Kol Ha'odom, V'lo Kol Ha'Mesim, V'lo Kol Ha'Mokoyim, V'lo Kol Ha'Shoz Shoven. And Reb Yehuda, we saw in the Mishnah, saying that you can't make a blanket rule concerning all people in all places at all times. The Gemara raises a question. Ibai Eloho, Reb Yehuda ben Bava Lekula Polig or Lechumra Polig? Reb Yehuda ben Bava, is he trying to present a point of leniency or a point of stringency in his observation, in his remarks? On the side of the Gemara under our Nosei Mivneh heading, the diamond marking appears, Shnei Maisim Shehuvu Kedei Levarer E Reb Yehuda ben Bava B'masis in Polig L'kula L'chumra. Two incidents are quoted here to see, to establish what is the purpose of Reb Yehuda ben Bava in appearing in the Mishnah. Is he coming to be more lenient or more stringent? So we continue now. Toshma, and note that this is a long marking. Toshma dahu gavra detova be'Karmi. Karmi is the name of a city. It was a fellow that drowned in Karmi. V'asku abe hadaya, and he was drawn up in a different place, say downstream in Bay Hadaya. Leboser tlosa yoimen. 3 days after 3 days. Leboser means later than, more than 3 days after he drowned. The ansivo Ravdimi Minardo Lidvisu, and Ravdimi enabled the woman to remarry. Vesu Haugavra, another individual of a person, the Atba Bediglas, he drowned in Diglas, the name of a river. The Asku Agishra Dishavistina, and they hauled him up at the location called Gishra Dishavistina. The Ansiva Rava Lidvisu, Apuma Dishushbini, and Rava enabled the widow to remarry on the testimony, Pumalir's, based on the mouth of, but it means the testimony of Shushbini, his very good friends. Leboser Chamisha Yomi, more than 5 days after he had drowned. In other words, you have two stories where an individual is being identified as so-and-so more than 3 days after their death. E Amr's Bishlamo Lekula Polig. If you say that Reb Yehuda ben Bava in the Mishnah was, his statement was designed to expand the amount of time that the Tanakhama had stated. The Tanakhama stated the testimony must be within 3 days of the death, and Reb Yehuda was coming to say it doesn't have to be within 3 days. So then, Inhu the Ovid ke Reb Yehuda ben Bava. Then the practices that we saw here, we had sort of Dimi and Rava, they ruled in accordance with Rab Yehuda ben Bava, who didn't have that 3 day restriction. Eloi Yamris Luchumra Polig. If, however, you say that he, Reb Yehuda ben Bava, is coming to restrict matters, then Inhu David Keman, then they, Ravdimi Narda and Rava, who according to whom were they ruling? Not the Tanakhama, and certainly not Reb Yehuda ben Bava, who's being even more restrictive. The Gemara says that from these stories, you cannot conclude that Reb Yehuda ben Bava is coming to be more lenient. Shiny Maya de Tzamtzi. the cases involved drowning, and as such, we saw in both cases the atba. You notice that we dot underline that for this reason. They were drownings in water, and the tsamsi means they seal, water seals up. It doesn't allow decomposition to set in a rapid form, and in other words, it serves as a type of preserving agent, and hence the body doesn't change as a result of that passage of time. The Gemara asks, but did we not say before Vamris Maya Marzumaka, in the case of the fellow that fell into the water and they hauled up his leg above the knee, and we said, wouldn't that be proof that a person who is Meguyad dies? And the other Mandomar said Meguyad is not considered dead, said, well, there it's different because water irritates injury. So water exacerbates the problem. How can you say here that water is a type of preservative and doesn't ruin, doesn't exacerbate matters? The Gemara answers, Hani mili hechodiko maka. When do we say that maya is marzu? But just as the Gemara says, marzu maka. When there is an injury, like the case of the person's leg being cut off, that leaving an open wound, so the water will hasten death. Avol hechod leko maka, where it's simply a simple drowning, where there was the individual was not wounded, mitzvah it seals up. It preserves. The hani meaning the idea of our being able to be made the chiaske chazia b'shaite. That's only if, as at the moment that the body was hauled up, you saw it. So that it's true the body was in the water a number of days, more than 3 days. The water will preserve the body, provided you see the body as soon as it is hauled up. Aval ishti, if after the body was in the water a long time, it then was hauled up and it waited outside the water before, waited a while until someone came to identify it, then we cannot rely on the identification because misbach tofach. Literally, misbach tofach means it bloats, it expands. It means that after the body is hauled up and is let to sit out in the air, it will undergo a change. So that if you're coming to identify the body, you're seeing now a changed body. So to you, it looks like so-and-so, but that so-and-so is not the victim, because if you would have seen the body as soon as it was drawn out, it wouldn't look like it does to you right now. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access Marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.